Welcome to this Interpreting Wine's first ever wine audio masterclass series, a collection of talks and tastings with experts and producers. I'm, of course, your host and podcast founder, Lawrence Francis. Between them, these episodes show that audio can be used to both educate and engage audiences at this most challenging of times for wine producers and importers. And if you like what you hear and would like to discuss producing content like this for your brand, including the costs and what's included, please do book time in my diary directly at interpretingwine.com/call. Today's episode of the Wine Audio Masterclass series features Rebecca Palmer, wine buyer and associate director at Corney & Barrow. She kicks off coverage of an amazing event held at Lady of the Grapes, which celebrated women in the wine industry. Rebecca's talk covers her progression in the industry, which I think delivers fascinating insight for anyone who's interested in what it's like to work in wine. Enjoy!
I'm so delighted to be able to share the wines of Vivian Ujferi from Barta Winery with you, and also Wendy Althwaite's wines from Ambriel in homegrown West Sussex. They're quite new to our portfolio of wines at Corney & Barrow, so it's great to have a fresh audience and to be able to share them with a number of new potential customers. So our marketing team asked me to kick off with a few, comments, I suppose, on my experiences of the wine trade. I've actually been working in it for quite some time. And just to talk a little bit about the challenges I've faced along the way, how I actually got into it in the first place, and a little bit of insight into where I think the wine industry is going and the role that women will play in it. So then I'll hand over to Wendy, who will be introducing her wines along with the small plates that Carol and her team have produced, and then to Vivian, who will be talking you through her amazing wines from brilliantly named village of Mad in Hungary. So I've got a few little cards here, otherwise I'll probably forget my way. Also, I've had at least a glass of Wendy's excellent 14 rosé sparkling. The first question the marketing team asked me to talk about was, how did I start out in the wine industry? And I had to rack my brain a bit here, because actually it was a long, long ago. And, you know, I am pre-millennial, as you've probably realised. So I graduated in modern languages, that was my degree, and I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do after I'd graduated, though I knew that I wanted in my working life to carry on using the languages that I'd studied, which was essentially French, Italian and German. And so I also realised I needed to have some really strong admin skills. And at this time, I mean, we were still writing everything. We wrote letters. We even, you know, it's pretty much quill and parchment at that stage. And so I thought, crikey, I'd better learn how to type. You know, at this point, Microsoft Word was a sort of, you know, little point on the horizon. But I did do that. And while I was there, I saw an ad at this essentially secretarial place where I did this course for somebody who was a strong administrator, who had all the skills, and that was even T-line shorthand at that point. And it was for a Girl Friday in a small wine importing company in London, which no longer exists now. It was bought by Berry Brothers some time ago. And it was somebody who could administrate and who was fluent in French and Italian. And so that's where it all started. And it was a small wine company. Two people ran it, and I supported them. And I thought, oh my God, what am I getting into? All my friends were doing all these glamorous jobs, Procter & Gamble, Unilever, working for banks, getting paid squillions of quid. I thought, oh my God, what am I doing? But I did everything. In 2 years I was there, I was selling into supermarkets, into the on-trade, restaurant trade, into independent wine merchants and bottle shops around the UK. I was handling press inquiries. I got to know all the journalists at the time. I was developing new products. I was handling all the supplier relationships. It was just me on my own, and obviously these two people who were adorable. What else did I do? Organised tastings and events. I liaised with generic bodies. and pretty much did everything, because if I didn't do it, then nobody else was going to do it, plus all the admin, the placing orders, the whatever it was. And using the fax machine, the brilliant thing about that, by the way, is that when you've got archives further down the line, you go to do all your filing, everything's disappeared because, you know, it's all gone off the thermal paper. Anyway, that's just for those of you who have to go back in time. Anyway, this was a massive grounding for me. And I also did wine exams. They put me through wine education. So I did the WSET diploma, or, you know, it's not called that anymore. But it was a very useful and intense first job for me in the wine trade. So that was how it all started. And then I went on to work for a larger wine company, Bibendum, which is still going today. And then I went freelance, did all sorts of bits and pieces, and ended up having my first wine buying job, which was something that I'd always actually wanted to go into, at Laithwaite's, which is a big, you know, mail order wine company that you've probably all heard of, which was a fantastic experience. And I was really grateful for the break that my then boss, who recruited me, Peter Greet, gave me, because he was a fantastic mentor and taught me so much about dealing with producers on this sort of on a more massive scale, and helped me learn how to blend wines, which was something that I hadn't done at that point, which was, you know, a really fantastic gift. I'm still grateful for that, and I'm lucky these days to have a team to sort of impart that to. Anyway, so what's my role today was the next question. So today I run one of two buying teams at Corney and Barrow, and some of my team are here today. Lovely Margot in the corner. We work with producers from most wine regions around the world. We have a multi-million pound budget. I've got a six strong team, which, you know, is the most fantastic thing. Very, very strong, supportive team. And we taste literally thousands of wines a year, and that's so that you don't have to. You know, it takes an awful lot of it's true, it takes an awful lot of, what's the phrase? Pig's ears to get to the silk purse. So, yeah, when people say, oh, your job, it's so amazing, you get to taste wine all the time. It's like, yeah, you know, but you wake up at 8 a.m. and you don't really want to taste red wine straight from a barrel that's not had all the treatments done to it yet. You want to be in your duvet with a really frothy hot chocolate, you know what I mean? But anyway, it is a fantastic job. And one of the most rewarding things we do is obviously developing the relationships with the producers we work with. And the aim effectively of for us as a team is to, we have to manage a portfolio of over 100 producers on our side of the business, that I suppose the aim is to produce a range of wines and to manage a range of wines that represent the world. So we work with producers from around the world, and those producers are, we really try and make sure that they're the benchmarks of their region and their style, and they are, they sort of share our philosophy, which is very much long term and helping people to sort of build their reputation in the country. And we represent them exclusively, so we're working, you know, with restaurants around the UK, and sometimes also with our operation in Asia, to represent their interests and build their brand, and they start to become like family. And we manage those, so the people in my team, we all work on them together, and we manage them, and we create plans for them, and, you know, we all celebrate their listings, you know, in restaurants like Lady of the Grapes, which is, you know, one of many, but it's always special when we, you know, get a wine on somebody's list and we see it, somebody enjoying it on the table with their dinner or whatever it might be. So what we do essentially on a day-to-day basis is manage that portfolio. We're also, one of the massive things that we spend our time doing is quality control, QC as we call it. Now, it's entirely different QC to Wendy QC, who she'll talk to you about her own version of QC later. But we spend a lot of time assessing the quality of wines, making sure that they are what we ordered, that they're not showing a fault. And you'd be surprised how, even with really excellent producers, how often something can come through the door and it's thrown a haze, or there's crystals in the bottle and people think it's broken glass, or, you know, it goes on and on, but we're the sort of gatekeepers so that you don't have to see any of all that. And actually, as buyers, one of the things we spend most of our time doing is actually selling. Because to be a good buyer, you have to be first and foremost a salesperson. We're selling to ourselves. When somebody, a producer, comes and pours us the wine, and we almost have to sell it to ourselves in some kind of weird reverse way, and make sure that we'd know how to sell that on to someone else, that we really are convinced by the story and by their approach, and that it's real and authentic, and they are doing something really special. They're going the extra mile, and we are sort of really transmitting that when we go out to our colleagues, our salespeople, our marketing people, who have to actually weave that and actually sell the stuff. And also the other part of what we do, I suppose, and it sometimes feels like quite a small part, but it's finding new wines for our portfolio. So staying ahead of the game, really, that sounds a bit naff, really understanding what's out there in the market, what's hot, which regions have been hit by frost or cyclones or whatever, so they're not producing anything this year, versus those that are, you know, doing really well, and, you know, the new hot variety on the block, whether it's Fourmint, Vivian's amazing wines, and Fourmint obviously have been in Hungary forever, but, you know, we're only starting to really discover wines like these and varieties like these in the UK, thanks in part to you, Lilla, Wines of Hungary in the corner. But we spend a lot of time, you know, trying to work out what's going on and working with our sales teams to find out what they want to take to market, so that actually the portfolio ends up being quite balanced. And we make our own blends and recipes, and we develop, you know, we help to develop labels from the outset, which can be, you know, really fantastically interesting as well. Somebody else asked me to include tonight what challenges I'd found along the way being part of the wine industry here, and particularly as a woman, and how I overcame them. I must say that when I first joined the industry, which was in 1996, I found it stuffy, intimidating, extremely closed, very male, very pinstripe, and I sort of questioned why I wanted to do all this. And actually, it was the producers, their stories, their lives, their families, you know, their babies, which are the wines that we sell today, which really helped me to stay encouraged when I felt that the backdrop, you know, was pinstripe wallpaper, effectively. But I think the trade has become more accessible, and I think it has become more open to women. And I'm not going to, you know, get on a soapbox and, you know, about women. But I think that the industry has come a long way, and I think it still has a long way to go in terms of the opportunities that it gives women to develop their career and so forth. I think it's also a question of building self-confidence. It took me quite a long while to know how to stand up in certain situations, particularly with older men, particularly in South America, when they all assumed I was just the secretary. And yeah, many stories along the way. And actually, there's been a lot of me too. You know, probably many of you have had, the people in the trade here have had, and who are not, have had experiences of that hashtag as well. And some of them, for me, came from women. But I was also lucky enough to have a lot of mentors, mainly men actually in the industry, who recognised it was difficult to, in quite a small industry, to make your way, and who were very kind to me, whether that was, you know, whether they were my bosses along the way, who were my direct bosses, or other people who I met. Some of them are here still, some of them sadly are not. But it's very important to have mentors, and I hope that we could establish a bit more of a framework in the industry for helping younger people to develop and grow, because I think it's a very hugely important and sort of intimate thing to be able to help people along their way in what can sometimes be quite an intimidating industry. Finally, What is the future of the wine industry, particularly for women? Well, I think there are going to be increasing issues with making wine. I think we face unprecedented environmental challenges, and I think that is going to force costs up, and it's going to make it more important to understand to tell the stories of wine and to work in a more sustainable way. And I think that's a massive part of what we try to do at Corney & Barrow, is seek out producers also who are working more sustainably. I think the health lobby plays a massive part in the future of wine. I don't know enough about it, wouldn't be able to give you enough background on that to talk in depth about it, but it is a massive issue. Asia, China in particular, are massively emerging markets already, and I think they will prove influential and inspirational, really, in the way that they enjoy wine, which is sort of much more about edutainment, you know, the education as part of entertainment and wanting to learn. And that's a good thing, because it enables us to, you know, develop the storytelling piece a bit more, which I think is so key to wine. And then I really do feel, and this isn't particular to wine, but sort of feel that our social structures have to evolve. For women, this is, and maybe for working parents, the social structures need to evolve to allow women to allow all of us to organise ourselves a bit more easily in society in general, to be able for women, well, for women to be able to carry on holding down their careers, to be able to work flexibly if they have kids, or you know, fathers too, if that's going to be the way forward, but to shape things in a way that is allowing people to be more, to be able to have a career and have a family. And it's particularly tricky in a role like ours, because we're travelling a lot. So it's a little bit of a challenge in terms of that sort of angle. So I hope that things will evolve over the time, and that work will really become more flexible to allow women to work in that way. Anyway, that's all I have to say, pretty much. If you've got any questions generally about what we do, then we're very happy to talk to you. But I would like to hand over to Wendy Outhwaite from Ambriel.
Thank you so much, Rebecca. A fantastic way to kick off coverage of the event. Do see below for the Corney & Barrow website and that of Lady of the Grapes. Sincerely looking forward to a time when we can return to this fantastic venue in London's Covent Garden. This is, of course, the first of three episodes recorded on the night, and the next episode will feature Wendy Outhwaite, winemaker at Ambriel Winery in Sussex. To subscribe to the podcast and to learn more about potentially sponsoring a series on interpreting wine, do head to interpretingwine.com. And as ever, I would love to have you following along with me on social media, where I'm at Interpreting Wine on Instagram and Facebook, at Wine Podcast on Twitter, and email hello@interpretingwine.com. See you next time.